Good afternoon, everyone. We'll get going. Today we'll continue with a couple of our departmental reviews. And first up is the city clerk, Mr. Reeves.
Okay, so I have a brief memo. I won't kind of go through it all. I'll just kind of touch on the basics as far as financial goes. The city clerk's office budget came in under budget last year, and that was a combination of higher than expected revenues and then some lower than budget expenditures. Mostly that was in the personnel side. We had an employee that had been out. We've been using temporary employment, and then finally, about partway through the year, we were able to get that situation resolved and hired a full-time employee replacement, but we did have some savings in the meantime. As far as kind of highlights or any kind of big issues or anything, I think mostly what we're seeing in my office is the technology improvements. The biggest one clearly being the laser fiche system. We have that installed and up and running now. All of our resolutions and ordinances are being routed through that system, so that means that when they are created by the city attorney's office, they aren't printed anymore. Terry doesn't get to have blue backs anymore. They now show up in the laser fiche system. Once the council approves them, they go through the mayor for signing. Randy and I get them for review, and then we process them through. They go to a folder that's available for all staff if they need to find any resolutions or ordinances. And right now we still have to manually attach them back to the web agendas, but there is an application that IQM2 and LaserFiche are working on together. So in the future, they'll automatically link back to the web agenda once they're approved and all those good things. Next step with that is the signing of all the other city documents electronically, which would include our contracts. And those sort of things. We do have a large number of contracts. As me being out 3 days last week, I come back and see the stack and everybody asking where they're at. And the mayor will attest to the stacks that I keep bringing to him. Mm-hmm. So we are going to start working on that process in June. And that should not only be much more efficient in the way we handle the signing of contracts, but it also make things a lot easier for departments when they want to know where something is. As you start rolling this out into the departments, they'll be able to access LaserFiche themselves. They can see where in the process a contract is, and will save, I think, a lot of time and hassle on my department of people trying to find things, not knowing where they are, not sure who has them for review, those sort of things. And then ultimately with that, we're working towards that migration of all city documents being stored within the LaserFiche system. And the biggest thing with that is, as we know, with the new laws being passed for data security and data practices, that we need to make sure as a city, we know where all our documents are, that we know that private documents are being stored in a manner that is not accessible unless you have a business reason to access them, and those sort of things. Right now, it's difficult for us to do because we do have a server system that is spread out with all the different departments and server folders and things like that, and we don't have a way to review all the documents in there to ensure that they're protected the way they should be. The other part with that is also the retention. Once the document's retention is up, we should be deleting it off of our system because it does cost money to store information, and that cost is really going to go up as we start looking at these things like license plate readers, body cameras, those sort of things. We have to be very cognizant that we're not keeping data and paying for the storage of that data that we don't need. Other than that, the other technology things that we're working on is that we are finally going to migrate off of AS400. That's been an ongoing issue. And one of the biggest things that my office uses that for is assessments. So we are in the final stages of getting cost proposals. We do have money budgeted, hopefully it's enough, to transfer this to a new system. It's a much better system for assessments. I think it'll be a much cleaner system. It'll allow for a lot easier interface between Public Works and their projects in my office and sending out of notices. It'll also open things up for the public to have a lot easier access to identify assessments against a parcel, whether they're current, whether they're pending, whatever they might be, through the system. The City of St. Paul uses it. It has a very good review, so we're looking forward to moving towards that. And then the next one, really that's a big one, is the parking technology for my office, which is a permanent parking, as we've talked about here. We will be looking at some point here this year, moving towards a electronic version of the permitting for residential parking. So you're not seeing all the tags, the temporary permits we issue, all those sort of things. It will be all tied to license plates. So that way we'll better control the fact that if we issue a temporary permit that somebody puts in, say, their window for their violin teacher, instead of that, which may be floating out to any number of vehicles after we give it out, it will be specifically tied to a license plate. Our vehicles will have, our parking control vehicles will have license plate readers. They will go through and they can grab the block and identify any vehicles that are not properly permitted for that area. It will give us the ability to issue temporary permits by day, by week, by month, whatever it might be. It'll also allow us to control the number of permits we issue to certain locations, as we've talked about. So that should definitely be a much more efficient process than the way we do it right now. It'll also allow for people to apply online, not have to worry about coming in to pick up anything. We can do it all without ever having to really come into City Hall to do any of the work. So really those are the big things that I've been working on as far as the technologies things. There's some other kind of information in the memo that talks about kind of some other special projects. I don't know that necessarily need to review all of those. So, you know, really with that, that's kind of the most project sort of things. And as far as positions for next year, I won't have any new position requests. Really with the technology that we're using, we're shifting a lot of employees around from their duties. The freeing up of the pet licensing has helped that a lot to work with that Laserfish document management system. So until we really get all these programs up and running and implemented, I won't know for sure about any staffing things, but I can't expect that we are going to need any more staff to deal with our activities. And my hope is it will actually free up some more staff time to do more customer service at the front desk and those sort of things, which right now we kind of just rotate among a number of different people in my office. But I think with the new technology, we'll be able to maybe free somebody up to be there full time, not have to have getting up, the waiting, all that sort of stuff. So really, I won't have any new personnel requests for next year. So really with that, that's kind of the brief rundown of what my office is doing.
One question I have, and this might be more for Mr. Adkins, and you mentioned the license plate readers. I know there's been some controversy, license plate readers, primarily in law enforcement and moving violations and so forth. Do we have any of those sorts of legal quagmire issues for this kind of use for license plate readers that you know?
Well, until I see the bill, which I hear has been passed but not signed, it's hard to respond. I'm told that the bill's passed with a 60-day retention period. And it very well might cover this type of technique of using license plate readers to gather that type of information.
And really, for our purposes, we haven't quite worked out the details yet. But unless we get a hit that is tied to a ticket that will be issued because they're parking where they're not supposed to be, our plan will be to delete that data off every night because we won't need it for anything else. Now, if the police would ask that we keep it for some other reason, that's something we'd have to consider. But strictly for permit parking purposes, unless it's tied to some sort of ticket we issue, we do not need to retain that. And the plan would be for our purposes to delete it off right away. Now, if for some reason, part of a larger policing picture, they would want us to start retaining some of that, that would be a discussion that we'd have to have as far as a policy with the police. But for my office's purposes, if it's not tied to a ticket, we'll just delete it off at the end of the shift.
Okay. Other questions? Mr. Ruska.
Aaron, I just want to comment about, I've been very impressed since you've been hired as city clerk with your level of energy and your use of the technological advantages that are out there. It's one of the things that we've really stressed as far as the council is, how can we be more efficient by use of technologies? And when I see the things that you're getting done and the budget that you have and the you know, not a need for additional positions and additional help, it seems like you're really applying those abilities and those technologies to help you to be more efficient and to it seems like we're taking on more volume, but you're getting more things done, and that's impressive. So I really appreciate that. You mentioned something on your budget that you said that it took some time to get an FTE in there, so you used some temporary staffing or like contract staffing, and in essence you ended up saving quite a bit of money. And I know that's also something that we've talked about doing. Is there an opportunity for us to do more contract employee type stuff so we don't have to commit to the heavy expense of a full-time employees over time? How did that work out for you? Is that something that you can see is something that maybe would work in the future more?
Right. It worked out okay for us, just because of kind of what the position was and sort of what the duties were. But we knew that at some point it was a full-time position that we needed to fill. We actually had a person almost doing it on a full-time basis to get the work done, because we were basically down one. And it was an okay for a little while, but we also, we ran into at some point that, one, it's a full-time position that we need. And the other issue then is it is a union position technically, so as we can only fill that full-time position on a temporary basis as we work through the other personnel issue that we had tied to it, and so we were okay with that. But long-term, if it was a part-time position, I would more than promote that we continue with it. But because it was a full-time position with the full-time duties, it is tough to do that on a long-term basis. But it works really great on fill-ins. If we had, I think we would definitely do that again and say if we had somebody that went out on extended medical leave or something, it would, I think, a pretty good option. And we've been lucky and got some good employees out of that. We did rotate through a couple different ones just because they would find regular employment somewhere else. We'd lose them off, and then we'd have to kind of recruit back somebody else in. But I think it's definitely a good option. I mean, it worked well for my department. I can't speak for the other departments how it might work. But it is something that we do on a regular basis on election years. Just because of the coordination of 500 and some election judges, Eileen can't do it all, but she's close. We do need some help with just that coordination of the scheduling and recruiting and stuff. So we will, again, in our 2016 budget, have a temporary person that we work with for roughly 7 months, 6-7 months out of the year to help strictly with elections. So for us, it's worked great because with my budget, it's very cyclical that way. You can see that I do discuss that we have a big reduction in our budget this year. Well, it's not election year. So all we have is our basic maintenance contracts and our equipment, and that's all we're really paying for this year. So for us, we've used it, and it's been before I've started, we've been using that temporary position to help us through the elections, and that's worked out great. Since I've been here, we've had to use it to kind of fill a full-time position while we work through a personnel matter. Worked well, but eventually long-term, we did have to kind of promote to full-time. But I do recommend it. Mm-hmm. I do think it works out well, especially in unique situations like my department, where we do have a spike in activity every other year, or for a while there every year, but sure. Hopefully every other year.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Campy and then Mr. Hickey.
I just wanted to follow on, because the first time I heard you describe it, it sounded like the savings was from going from having a contractor to hiring a full-time individual. Okay, so using, even though we had a full-time person that was out, having a contractor was still a savings over hiring a replacement?
That full-time person eventually was out long enough that we were completely off all sort of city-paid leave.
Yeah.
And they were on basically an unpaid leave status. So with that unpaid leave status, yes, it was cheaper to have a contract employee when you don't have factory
sure.
benefits and all those sort of
okay.
things.
All right.
So when they were both on, if you look back a year to the 2013 budget when this kind of issue started, my budget was much higher because we had an employee that we were paying through paid leave and also having to pay a contract employee at the same time, and that's when my budget was up.
Thanks.
Okay. Mr. Hickey?
Aaron, thanks for the presentation. This question is a little bit down the weeds, but as long as I have you here, you mentioned permit parking. I get a lot of questions on permit parking, and now that we're going to this license plate reader, it seems like it'd be a good opportunity. I don't know what the plans are, but you mentioned either through the web or maybe someone could call in and say, hey, I've got a visitor, and they're going to be here from 4 to 6 tonight. If we could have that kind of responsiveness, it seems like that could be a real convenience for people, and the license plate reader would tie right into that.
Yep, and that's what this system will allow. It will allow us really any time increment of parking now. And it's all tied to a license plate number. So you don't have to even come in anymore. You can do it online. We can do it over the phone, however you want to do it.
I think it'll be well received.
Yeah, it'll be a much easier process. It'll be much more efficient for the city, too. I mean, right now, people can apply online. They can renew. They can do whatever. They still have to come in.
Sure.
Still have to come in. We still have to give it to them, all those sort of things. Or we have to mail it. So this will, I think, save us a lot of time and money doing it.
Did you anticipate that this will change the cost of the permit parking, or is it roughly going to be the same with the technology? Or?
That's more on the transit side, and they're in Public Works and Transit's kind of working with that contract. We've been involved with it on
sure.
our kind of more of our hands-on side of how it's going to work. So they are going to be coming forward. I think sometime soon, Transit will be coming forward to discuss more of the permit parking, some options, and it's going to be also discussed with how that cost will play out. So I'm not sure of that answer yet.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Bill Beck. Aaron, can you talk a little about administrative fines? Are you seeing an increase? Is that taking more time?
It's not been a huge increase, really. No, it's been fairly steady, I think. The one thing that I didn't mention with the new assessment software program, this LOGIS system, is that we are going to be looking at using that for administrative fines as well. I think that'll definitely help with the process. Administrative fines isn't a big number. Let's pull it up real quick. I think I got the individual one, but it's been fairly pretty flat, really. And it doesn't... It's not necessarily... it's not necessarily a big budget number. I mean, it hovers basically around about $3,000 a year in expenses for us, anywhere between $3,000 to $4,000. It's not the expense part, but it is a little time consuming to go through the process right now. So we're thinking with the LOGIS systems to be much easier. It'll be because right now we generate the notices the same way we do with our special assessments through AS400. So it'll make that system a lot easier. We won't have multiple departments having to touch the same assessment information. We'll be able to put it in the system from one person, route it all the way through, go through the process. So I think it'll make it a little easier. Now, if we start looking at adding more things to it, like it's been discussed for, like, say, housing, obviously that will do some increase, but I do think with the new system, it shouldn't be... Actually, I think it should be much easier to add things to the administrative fine side if we want to. You know, right now it's just a little more cumbersome to add things to it because the process is personnel time-consuming. So I think with the new LOGIS system, it'll be much easier to add the housing that's being discussed or anything else maybe that looks like it might be a better handle through the admin fine process.
Anyone else? Ms. Means.
Mr. Reeves, thank you very much. Since you've been here, you certainly have demonstrated that you have increased the efficiency within the office and also saved money. So really appreciate that. I have a question about the... the laser fish. And now you're through with the resolution ordinance, so that's all available online, which is really good. Didn't you have storage also for other documents? Are you letting some of that space go and not paying storage space?
No, how it's working is that we're gonna start filling in, like we have existing documents that we store now within our server system. The plan is to migrate those onto LaserFiche and eliminate the multiple copies that we have. I think what you're seeing now with some documents, especially say for like construction projects or for even out of my office, elections, things like that, you often have the same copy of a document stored in say multiple employee folders underneath one department, you know, kind of folder system. And so the goal is to move the final of all these documents into the LaserFiche system, so ultimately we'll have one copy of, say, a contract on the system and not a contract sitting in, say, the project engineers folder, in my folder, because we have an assessment tied to it, all those sort of things. So actually, we'll be moving, and we will eventually be saving space by moving it there, because the goal is to eliminate all these duplicates. It's going to be a big process to do this, and as I said, that's an ongoing sort of thing, but it will eventually save us space. And then we will backfill some of these things, too. We don't have a lot of things online right now from past years. So we do have one of my employees and a volunteer that are working to slowly backfill in information into the LaserFiche system so that when somebody wants to pull up a construction project folder for a project that we did, say, 10 years ago, where you can look at the pay orders that we received, any change orders, the project plans, the assessment information, we'll have those all located within one folder that they can pull up off that system. That's going to be a little bit of a process to kind of backfill. So, you know, but we do want that on there. I mean, the ultimate goal is to, at least on my side, is to try to cut down. We are getting a larger number of data practice requests for various things. And right now it is a bit of a time-consuming process because it's my office having to email different departments asking for the information, having to get it back, having to send it to the city attorney's office for review, getting it back, and distributing it back out to the requester. And if we can put all the public information out there that we know is public, it's already been reviewed, it's already been designated public, it's available for the public, that way if somebody, we do get a request, we can say, well, right here. We have an open government portal. You can go there. There's a number of ways you can search it, that sort of thing. Ultimately, that's our other hope, is that it just makes things more transparent for the public. Budget documents, GIS, land documents, whatever it might be,
make it available in one location, easy to find. A lot of the things are available now on the website. We're just trying to consolidate it, and we're trying to make it a lot easier for anyone to find what they're looking for on pretty much any given subject that we deal with.
That sounds great. So you have one person and one volunteer working on this. How long, when do you think we will, is it years down the line?
And that's just my department and my documents. I mean, a lot of it's going to have to depend on the different departments, and obviously they're going to be much bigger than mine, and they'll have more documents. So it will be an ongoing process. The biggest thing for us right now is to set a date moving forward that everything goes into that. And that way, we're just worrying about kind of slowly backfilling it as we can. So it's hard for me to set a schedule because it is reliant on all the other departments and their information that they have. Now, some of them already have the historical information somewhere on the server. We just need to transfer it to this system, make it searchable, review it for public, private, all those sort of things. So it will be an ongoing process. You know, open data is not an easy thing to transition to, but I think if we, as we start moving it forward, it's going to make it a lot easier because everything we do from now on will be available through this system, and then it's just the process of working with the departments to get it backfilled. So it's almost impossible for me to set a date on when we could have all that.
I can remember being in a situation where we were doing multiple, hard copy and soft copy, and then integrating that. It took a very long time, but thank you for taking that on. I appreciate that. How is it going with that working development permitting process?
It's been really good. I think it's been a good way for me to get involved with some of these different areas, and I think it served well as a nice connection between the city and development community. So I think that whole thing's been going pretty well. There have been some issues that have come up that, I've been able to just kind of be the go-between to try to bring together the right people to discuss and get to some sort of resolution. There's no way that you always come to the final resolution that, say, this party wants versus what the reality is, but it's been a good way to establish communication. We are working through this new development and permitting task force to kind of come up with some further recommendations on how the city can refine its development process. The department heads have been great to work with on that. We've been kind of going back and forth with the task force recommendations, the department responses, and we're almost to a point now where this task force is going to kind of have their final set of recommendations or ideas to bring back to administration for review. And so it's been a good process. I think it's worked well. I think it's been appreciated by the development community that they know that there is kind of more of a clear-cut person to talk to and things, and I think it's worked great. I've had good luck working with the department heads and getting the information we need and trying to just clarify what's happening and getting that back to the developer. And so I think, in my opinion, it's worked out very well doing that. It's been a good way to keep that communication going between the development side and the city. So hopefully that continues on, and I'm happy to continue doing that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Anyone else? Well, I think working smarter is an oft-used phrase, but you seem to have found a way to do it, and I do applaud you for that, so thank you for the report.
Thank you.
All right. Next up, Parks and Recreation Department Review. Mr. Whitman.
Good afternoon. Before I jump in, I just want to point out some folks that are here from who have a role in Parks and Recreation. First of all, we have board members Mike Quinn and John Sipple who are here. I don't think I missed any other board members. And then our staff, Mike Nigberg, he's head of the Park and Forestry Division. We have Ed Sterrett, who's director of what's left of the Recreation Center right now. He's here. Darrell Hikas, National Volleyball Center. Jeff Haberman in the back, he's our city forester. We've got Mike Schauber from leadership of park maintenance operations, and Dale McCamish, he's the division head over sports and recreation facilities. Ben Bolt, another new staff member who's our recreation supervisor. So I just wanted to point out a few things. I hope you all have the handout. Some of it, I think I put it down when the mail was being distributed, so you should have that in front of you. I want to say it's been my best year yet in Parks and Recreation, so hope to build on this success. But looking back at 2014, I provided some budget performance information. And as you can see, I'll just go right to the bottom line, our revenues were off by nearly $300,000, but our expenditures were also much less than expected. And I just want to point out a few things, and I'll go into more detail. On the expense side, we had several positions open, including our city forester and recreation supervisor. So in the case of the city forester, there are many projects that were put on hold during that vacancy, and many programs in the recreation side that generate revenue that were not as active or distributed out among other staff at the time. I shared with our board last year the cost recovery numbers, just to kind of show how we look nationally and compared to other cities. And for example, if you look at our recreation, which offers a lot of programming to youth, that's about average. A good year mark is 45% to 65%, depending on the type of programs. That means we're providing programming but also returning some revenue. Our facilities that are revenue generating are in the high 90s or in the 90s. Overall, we returned 41% of our costs. I just wanted to further go into that. One of the just interesting facts that we like to share is just how much of our services cost the residents. And if you look at all the program services and maintenance activities and divide that among the Rochester population, it comes to roughly $93 a year or 26 cents per day. That's just for your information. Looking at some of our highlights over our budget performance, we've got a great demand for everything you can reserve in the parks, picnic shelters, and event space. And that's been very consistent and been on the increase over the past few years. In 2013, this is getting at some of the recreation revenue, we formed a partnership with Rochester Softball Association to provide softball leagues. And that's an arrangement that was made, as I said, 2 years ago. We were still adjusting the revenue projections on that and trying to direct our recreation activities into other areas. So we've got potential there. And we have concerns over the outdoor pools. We've addressed this with our board, and we know that, and we appreciate the approval for the system-wide master plan, and that'll be a high priority as we look to the future of what we do with the Silver Lake and Soldiers Field pools. Golf revenue was mentioned here before, a few weeks ago, continues to be a concern. We've made some leadership changes there, and we're going to be looking at our fees. We're also going to be looking at the expense side and just how we can focus more effort on maintenance where it really matters, and maybe adjusting our standards on the turf and other areas that are outside of the field of play.
And, ask you about those last two things. Swimming pools and golf courses would seem to be good old standbys over the years. And I'm curious, are you seeing that nationally? Are we seeing fewer swimming pools and attendance taper off, and golf courses? Are they closing? What's the national trend there?
Well, the trends are moving towards different type of aquatic features. We've talked about splash parks and larger scale water parks. And that's what we're competing with. We're finding that people are driving out of town to go to the water parks. So that's what we're up against in the pools. The standard shallow water and deep end pool is kind of a dinosaur in the world of recreation programming right now. So that's, as I said, in our master plan, we want to address that. In some of the feedback I've received since I've been here, there's a great desire for splash parks. And that's just a concrete pad with some water features that kids can play on. They're fairly low maintenance compared to the pools, and they don't require lifeguards. So that's one of the reasons they're attractive in the world of programming. So that's some highlights there with aquatics. Golf, nationally, the trends are down. I think, you know, golf was at its peak in the, you know, the past 15, 20 years ago, and it's tapered off generally since then. One of the things I noticed, though, in Rochester, if you look at our steady user groups, golf does have steady participation. It's just not growing as it once was. We're addressing that with some marketing, trying to get younger players out, and with our first tee program, trying to get kids interested so it'll be a lifelong activity for them. Okay. Just wanted to hit some of the highlights of the past year. If you've probably noticed, Cascade Lake Park, Cascade Lake has taken shape over the past year. The trail is complete, and there's a significant progress on the beach, and the fence will be going in soon around the beach. And that was partially, part of the work there was grant funded. We made some progress in some individual park master plans, Soldiers Field, Indian Heights, Central, Quarry Hill, and Game Haven. And some of that work is grant funded as well. The Recreation Center, as I mentioned, is under construction right now and made it through the design phase in 2014. The Volleyball Center had great participation. Even though Darla reported a few times that she was concerned about some of the leagues, we came through a pretty good year. And same with Graham Arena. We've had a great balance there between ice events and dry land events with well over 500,000. And understand that the 500,000 is the dry events, so that doesn't take into account the big picture there. Ben Bolt joined us this year, and as I said earlier, we're shifting our focus because of the partnership we have with RSA to softball, and looking at some of the other trends in youth sports, we're trying to program some of the, just getting kids out to our parks. In fact, we had an event Saturday, Kids to Park Day, and it's just about getting kids comfortable and confident coming out to the parks. And we're fighting against all kinds of media and handheld devices and things that that I didn't have when I was a kid and spent a lot of time outside. So Ben is looking at addressing that through programming. Jeff Haberman joined us. Just wanted to point that I introduced him earlier, and as a city forester, that's another highlight of the year. And he's done some great things, which I mentioned here under volunteers. I got the number wrong. The 700 hours was not last year. It was to date this year. A volunteer directed towards planting trees, and that's over 200 trees that have been planted through volunteer efforts working with our city forester in our forestry area. Another volunteer effort I wanted to point out is the Game Haven Master Plan. Great deal of that work is being driven by the Rochester Active Sports Club. And we're also funding that through a grant. Indian Heights Park is one of the great success stories in neighborhood associations, and they received a grant of $51,000 to do exotic plant removal. And a lot of volunteer hours going to maintain that park. And most of our leagues and programs for youth and adults are in the area of sports are managed by volunteers. I discussed briefly the first tee program, and as you can see, our donations grew in that program quite a bit, from 8,000 in 2013 to 22,000 this past year. Addressing some of the challenges, the one thing is as our system has grown, our staffing has not kept up in the area of our park and forestry division, and in some of our other program areas. Pointed out the park land and the number of parks have increased dramatically, and I addressed that in our staffing requests later on. We have aging infrastructure, which you all know, and we have some relatively new buildings, such as the rec center project that is going on and the volleyball center. But many of our trails, playgrounds, park restrooms, and other facilities, and again, the pools are in need of work, as well as our tennis courts. One of the issues that we're seeing quite a bit is increased inquiries and requests, and our city forester spends quite a bit of his time, over a third of his time, addressing those issues, and takes away time that he could or should be out in the field. We've increased our inventory of maintenance equipment and maintenance activities, and as a result, we've outgrown our current maintenance facility. We've taken some temporary and stopgap measures, but that will need to be addressed. And the volunteer activities, even though it's on the plus side, it's also difficult to coordinate the many requests that come in. Typically, we'll get a lot of short notice requests that we find it very difficult to respond to. We direct some of these groups to trash pickup, which, you know, we can always use that help, but quite often they're looking for more engaging work that if we get it in on short notice, we just don't have the time to coordinate. Another area, and I address this in the position requests, is we have our reservations that come, requests that come in, spread out among three different areas right now, three different staff members. And I see the need to have a central point of contact for that. There's revenue that we generate from that activity, and there's quite a bit of potential that I think could be addressed if we had someone that focus time on that. For example, if a special event request come in, rather than having to walk the group through three different program areas, if they're wanting a park and a facility and other amenities, we can have a central point of conduct to coordinate that reservation.
That would seem to be an area where some of the technology that Aaron talked about might play a role in coordinating requests and dissemination of information and so forth.
And that's another thing I wanted to point out. We just started the training and installation today of our rec management system, and that'll create quite a few efficiencies in that area. We continue to receive requests for centralized sports facilities. Even though we have good quality facilities, they tend to be spread around town, and just as we're able to host quite a few events at Graham and the Rec Center, we feel we can really highlight this by highlight and bring in larger events if we had a centralized facility.
What kind of facility?
Multi-use field, soccer.
Outdoor turf facility.
Yeah, outdoor. And I mentioned the pools already, and golf. We are seeing some positive changes in golf. I attended all the icebreaker events. There were people that were there for this. Well, they returned to our icebreaker events after being away from golf for a few years. I think there's potential there for growth. I don't think we've hit all pushed all the buttons we can on marketing and being creative about getting some of the younger players out to our courses. Okay, this leads up to the staffing requests. To address some of the concerns that I mentioned, we're requesting a forestry program coordinator, an arborist, two landscape technicians, and an event and a reservation coordinator. And in discussing this with our staff, looking at our performance in 2014, looking at our greatest area of demand, feel this will provide us stability and help us to look forward to the growth that's expected here in Rochester. And we have details on those positions, and share. Our staff is here. We're happy to answer any questions.
Well, just a quick comment first. Excellent report. This is exactly what I had in mind. Relatively short and sweet, with a focus on some of the highlights and the budgets, and so good job on that. Questions? Mr. Hickey.
Paul, thanks for the presentation. I don't know if this is a question for you or for Dale. I know a little bit about Grand Marina, so I'm kind of zeroing in on that. When you look at the cost recovery, does that include the county share? Really?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Not the answer you're going for?
Yeah, that's what I hear coming next.
I'll just give you one more hit there on the Grand Marina, too. We did have an employee retire, the first employee that ever retired there, and he did not declare early, so we didn't budget for that.
Right.
I think that cost about $40,000. That's the first time anybody's ever retired from there. So.
Such a great job, man. How did you retire?
Yeah. All right. Anyone else? Mr. Ruska?
Sure. Paul, I work closely with your department, and I think you guys all do a super wonderful job with everything. It's tough trying to squeeze events and outside events with what's going on in the community because everything has so much demand and it's so much pressure, and yet we work, I think, pretty well together. Do you have, just to kind of think in big picture here, do we have any designated funds or any plans to fund any kind of facilities for the future?
We do not. That's one of the reasons I felt it important to look at a master plan. I realize that doesn't solve all of our problems, but it gives us a plan to address the funding needs to get where we need to go.
Yeah, and I think on top of that, just the ongoing maintenance. I think there's people have a certain expectation that we're going to have facilities that meet us. Certain threshold of quality and dependability and so on. And, I know, right now we're working on getting new scoreboards out in McQuillan at the $7,000 per business donation. And, we're trying to get creative and make things happen. But, there's rust showing at Grand Marina and some of the places. There's, some of the facilities, the turf is going to have to be, there's things that happen here that need to be replaced. That if we don't do it, figure out some revenue source, we're going to be looking at some pretty deteriorating facilities without any options on them. So it's just a concern that we have to all keep in mind moving forward. And so I appreciate your master plan. I think that'll help us.
So appreciate it.
Okay, Mr. Campion.
I thought Councilman Rusko was going to go a slightly different way, but I think to highlight one aspect of what he said that I think is fundamentally important for the future of the Rochester Park System is that public-private partnership there. The idea that the way to finance every aspect of the park probably can't be property tax dollars. So we're going to have to look for, I'll call them creative, but we might have to think outside the boxes we've been hemmed into for a real long time and come up with ways to do incremental improvements to some of these areas that are just begging for it. We have some parks that are getting outfitted at 50% of what we think is necessary for that park area. And if we can find ways to fill that gap, and I think that's important. The other thing I'm seeing is, and I'm glad to hear it sounds like we're taking reactive steps, but we're being proactive relative to a government agency about addressing some of the areas that are experiencing challenges. I mean, that's just got to be the way we do business now is when we start seeing some of these organizations come into hard times, we're going to have to get our hands in there and try and figure out how to right the ship a little bit. So glad to see that's taking place. Looking into the future, would like to see. I think what we're all going to be doing now is looking at the results of what some of these changes are, because unless we can kind of increase, let's call it solvency for some of these organizations, I think we have to have harder conversations all the time. It just gets more difficult the further down the road we get. So thanks. I guess I'll close with the thanks. Most people lead with it, but I know it's tough to get up here. It's a huge organization. It's a fundamental part of what we offer to our citizens, and I think you guys are doing a bang-up job.
Thank you. Ms. Means.
Thank you. I'm so pleased about the Indian Heights Park because it's just been discovered, I think, that it did have such significant value to all of us in the community. But can you tell me, what are the exotic plants? And exotic sounds like a treasure, and then you're removing them. So,
it's kind of incoherent words. I have some experts over here, but I'm going to really try to answer this. Exotic would be foreign to the area, and some of the characteristics are that they take over other plants in the area. And I've noticed you can pretty much tell it's an exotic or invasive plant if it's just prevalent and that's the only plant you see. There should be a diversity of plants in the area. Some examples are buckthorn, garlic mustard, and I'll leave it to Jeff and Mike.
It's pretty good.
No, I understand now. I know about buckthorn. That's an invasive species.
I had it going for a while, right?
I thought that was invasive. I didn't know it was exotic. But can you also just comment a little bit on the golf? It's really has gone down nationally, and they have something now where you can have foot golf. You know, are you thinking about that in the future? Other question I wanted to ask you along that same line is about marketing to attract millennials, youth, and teens. And as the First Tee program now has many schools involved, how is that working? Are they coming out, or is there transportation to get them out? Where is the barrier in that program?
Well, we're programming, and most of that is through volunteer efforts. And we're part of the national First Tee program, and we don't have data to show whether our younger crowd has come up through that program yet or not. I think that's, you know, we have a few years before we can really tell that story. And I think that is just one of many efforts we need to sustain golf. One is we need to address the younger players. Tennis has done that over the years to limited success. I mean, mixed success. And the other area is marketing, promotion, discounting. When you talk about marketing to the younger crowd, they want, you know, that they want to see a coupon on their smartphone. They want to be able to get the tee time within that hour. And, you know, so it's a really quick window that we need to be able to respond more quickly to. I think the other thing is we need to take a realistic look at the expense side. Golfers have expectation, especially here in Rochester, very high standard. We've looked at some ideas that are used nationally to, as I said, focus on that fairway and the green and make the other areas more natural and not require as much maintenance. So those are some of the areas we're looking at implementing this year. You mentioned foot golf. I didn't want to forget that. We have looked into that. I can't say we did an extensive survey, but we did talk to some of our icebreakers last year. The groups were not that thrilled about it. So we didn't want to open this year with a big surprise. We want to kind of ease into that. But we think there's potential there, although we have talked to a few courses where the revenue bump just wasn't all that significant.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Mayor.
A couple things. One, back on Indian Heights, I think obviously everybody worked on that, but Larry Mortensen, one of the board members, really worked probably extra on working with the neighbors and the Native American community here in town to get that all to where it's at, and I really appreciate that for what he's done, and just again to say last week in Rochester, we did have Native American Week that we celebrated, and with the folks that are from that particular community. So, as I know him yet, is Mort, when I worked with him, Larry Mortensen, did a great job on working with that, which at times had become somewhat contentious too between some different facets of it. The other is just this is more of an FYI, and I'm not sure just where this would go. Just today, got a note from somebody in the community that said it wasn't directed at the swimming pools of the city, but it was the swimming pools in our schools are not compliant with what they need to have for certain things. Obviously, Century High School does not have a school. The word was that Mayo High Schools is not in compliance anymore, and John Marshall's could be not in compliance. And I just, again, at noon today, asked one of the high school athletic directors, what does that all mean? And it was interesting that Mayo's is apparently not deep enough for the diving area. It's all about the diving. And if they try and would go deeper, they're into water. And I said, well, what's wrong with that? You're in a swimming pool. You know, why don't you use Bear Creek? It won't work. John Marshall's was more about what kind of diving board or something that they have. And there's some apparently state high school league rules that will be coming out that might clarify that. The person that sent this in said the only place they could go, and of course from the school standpoint, the rec center does have the pool that's good enough and for compliant for big meets and so on, but for regular Big Nine, I suppose, conference, they don't either have, probably don't have the money to spend to either rent the rec center for that. And so, as always, these people seem to think that maybe it's the public that should, or the city might have to build another pool someplace. And it was like, what? And so I have not, this person said, I'll be coming to see you. But it is just kind of like out there, something else. Now, Orcas, they're building a pool, I think. But I don't think it's one that's going to be for, no, they're
it's
not.
Practice. No, it's
they're
practice.
Building, but it's practice. It's
warm water
for,
practice.
It's not for diving or anything. It's one lane, so I suppose.
Right.
So that wasn't it. So just it's an FYI that now this is something out there that do we have the pools that are needed for competition, and the schools, two out of three, one doesn't have one is not in compliance, and the other one may not be. So just an FYI. Interesting stuff always.
Okay. All right. Mr. Woodger.
A few questions. So some of the poor neighborhoods in the town are being hit pretty hard by the ash tree removals and other tree removals. I know, I help out with the volunteer tree plantings, but those tend to be very small relative to the number of spaces in the community. Are we going into any of the neighborhoods, particularly the poorer neighborhoods, and replanting boulevard trees?
I'll let Jeff handle that one.
Yes. We are, EAB would be a discussion we could have on its own, and as well as invasive species, and I didn't want that to go away quite as quickly as it did, because we spend a lot of time on those, and emerald ash borer is an invasive species, an insect that, now that it's here, is completely wiping out a population of trees, and we're on the cusp of a major economic and ecological problem, now that we've found it here. To address your point, I think our community planting project this spring addressed one of those neighborhoods that you're talking about that was relatively completely devoid of trees. There were only 26 street trees in about a 20-block square area. And so we were able to convince enough people to allow us to plant another 100 trees in that area, which doesn't fill those streets by any stretch of the imagination, but it is something that I agree we need to put a priority on, and we'll continue to do that and address that in our upcoming projects.
Okay. But so we're not doing anything beyond the volunteer projects then, the few hundred a year in the neighborhoods?
Well, our total tree order for this year was about 750 trees, and so 500 of those are dedicated toward the community projects that we're doing. The remaining 250 of those will be planted primarily in parks, on the boulevards, in front of parks, throughout the city, including, poor neighborhoods as well as others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From a tree replacement standpoint, which is what your real question was,
yeah,
it's a matter of cost versus, the budget. And again, we need to take trees down, and a lot of trees go back in. We just need more money to do that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, and I understand that you are working on a urban forestry master plan, and that'll...
We're working on a management plan. The master plan is being guided by the Q committee, so the agency on that at this point in time.
Does Q know that?
As far as I know, because we met them 2 months ago.
2 weeks,
okay. Actually, I'm a representative for the Park and Rec.
Yeah.
And I John. Think there's some people working on that with the Park and Rec Department.
You one of them?
No.
Okay. All right. Next question. In terms of facilities management, I'm not talking about the programming of facilities, but many communities go to having centralized facility maintenance and operations with people with the background in that field. What's your thought on doing that as a community?
Outside of our department, citywide, or
you know, handling things like whether it be the civic center, the rec center, any other facilities, just the engineering and maintenance side of those.
I've experienced both. I know there's definite advantages to having a centralized facility maintenance department, and I would support that.
Okay. A little bit of a DMC question, but I noticed you do have the Central Business District maintenance number in there, which we expect as a direct result of DMC is going to probably grow pretty sizably in the downtown with some of the things you're talking about doing. Are we tracking those incremental DMC-related expenses so we can take that on to our contributions for DMC?
We are, and well,
from the standpoint of expenditures right now that have been down for personnel, there isn't any expenditures for directly DMC activities.
Yeah.
So I imagine that activity, I think we have a job for that, but yeah, our involvement has further been
affected. Yeah, and what I'm thinking of, you know, there's some plazas that are, you know, in the plans, and assuming those get built, they're probably it's going to fall on your department probably to maintain them. And at that point, you know, I just want to make sure that we're at least giving credit for those dollars that are above and beyond.
Typically, when we have a new venture or something like that, Michael, like 52 or Highway 14 or yep. Peace Plaza, we've got separate job tracking codes for those entities.
Okay.
So it can go down that way.
Okay.
We have a downtown service district. I think I'm not sure you'll get credit for maintenance and operating costs for those things.
Only the above and beyond because of DMC,
I heard you
right?
Say that. Yes,
I know my language well when it comes to DMC. The tennis center, there's been some talk about is this the right location for it, and you know what's the department's feeling? Is this the right location for it? Do we invest in it more heavily in its current location in the future? Do we look for a more accessible location for it?
A lot of questions there. One is first of all the existing structure is in, you know, it either needs to be completely replaced or renovated. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at that, is that a good time for us to look at other locations? We addressed this somewhat in the Soldiers Field Master Plan, looking at if we did focus on putting the demand for tennis in Soldiers Field, can we look at other things for Petsky Park? Mm-hmm. So I put me in a great position. I can just say, well, when we have our master plan process, that will take care of it.
Well played.
Those questions, that's the reason we are doing a master plan, to see where we should invest in what programs and what areas.
And I mean, I see both sides of it, and the neighborhood sees both sides of it. It's a great amenity for the neighborhood. It also physically separates the neighborhood from the park and, you know, creates some issues when there are tournaments being there as well. So you get that all figured out for us.
Your support of the master plan is a big help.
Yeah. The last thing is, a lot of communities, and I was just down in Houston where they did this fabulous, but they have parks foundations, and they're particularly working on business development to try and, you know, pursue some of these other dollars for parks investment. Outside of the Effie Williamson, do we have any organization that's doing this on a park system wide basis or anything like that, or is there a model that we could look at to maybe doing that to try and coordinate some of these efforts to improving parks?
There's currently not a system wide effort, and it's been my experience that that really needs to. I'd love to sit down with the potential donors and organization mm-hmm. and discuss our needs, but. It's been my experience that it needs to come from the groups that have that vested interest.
Well, you know, that's part of it, too, is a lot of places, you know, they do development, they go out and actively seek out these people. And I just don't know if we have, as a community are doing that right now at all. And it's they don't necessarily just show up and say, hey, I'd like to give you a few million dollars for this. And those are my questions anyway, so I appreciate the report.
I just one thing, we are doing some research into sponsorship and getting those efforts, possibly naming rights where it's appropriate.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of potential there. And I'm not opposed to a foundation. We have to use a strategy to make sure we're bringing the right people to the table and not overlapping mm-hmm. other requests.
Yeah, and I mean, the Rochester Area Foundation does a lot, but they don't necessarily go into this area at all. I just would really like to see the kind of philanthropy, figure out how to reach into that community and target it for the public good.
Welcome, Matt.
Mr. Ruska.
I was just going to tag on that when we got back from League of Cities last year, I was in Austin, Texas. We went to their park and rec mobile audience, and I brought that back to Paul that they had a foundation down there for the Parks Department. That's where a lot of the money had come to help them develop some of the parks, and that it was something that we kind of talked about trying to get going along with our venue development. You know, these things all kind of interact, but we do need some additional structure here in our community to take advantage of those things, because I think it's an opportunity missed. And I don't know if it falls at the Sports Commission or the Park Department, but it's something that I know Paul and I have talked about, and I think we will be pursuing it more into the future. It's one of our few options, really, that are out there. It just makes sense, and we have a lot of people that care about this community that I think would invest into the future of sports facilities, parks, trails, all those types of things, if there was more of a structure there to do so. And I think that's kind of on us to get that done.
I agree.
Okay, anyone else? Again, thank you for the report. Anything else for this afternoon?
Thank you.
And I will see everyone this evening.
Mr. Haberman.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Jeff.